I'd like to call to order the Oro Valley Town Council regular session, September 22nd, 2021. Mr. Standish, roll call.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon. And Mayor Winfield.
Here.
I move to go into executive session with the town manager, town attorney, and the town clerk.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion passes 7-0. Welcome to the Oro Valley Town Council regular session. We're going to reconvene. Mr. Standish, roll call.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. Please join us this evening in the Pledge of Allegiance. It's a simple thing, but I have to admit it's been a wonderful experience to return in person and to stand together and recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Well, Mr. Standish will announce upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Board of Adjustment will be holding their next meeting on September 28th at 3 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. The Historic Preservation Commission will be meeting on October 4th at 5 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. The October 5th Planning and Zoning Commission meeting has been canceled. And then the next Town Council regular session will be on October 6th at 6 p.m. right here in the Council Chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. For Council reports this evening, Councilmember Jones-Ivy will recognize Charles Elliott, who's here with his mother, a junior at Push Ridge Christian Academy. Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. Charles, I'm going to ask you and your mom to come up, okay? We're going to stand here in the center of the room. It is my honor this evening to present our Spotlight on Youth, and tonight it is Charles Elliott. Charles is a junior at Push Ridge Christian Academy. As a National Honor Society member and a high-achieving honors student, Charles goes above and beyond the average student, and we are here to celebrate his dedication to academics, athletics, and extracurricular activities like leading a team of fellow students in a global finance competition sponsored by the Wharton School of Business. Charles's dedication to his physics and engineering studies go beyond getting the work done correctly. His physics teacher states he is a beast, that he not only understands complex concepts, but he can also play with them. His engineering teacher states that he is so fluent with the engineering principles that what Charles says and writes is precise. Charles is also a member of the school's cross-country team, which he enjoys and excels at. If that wasn't enough to keep any one of us busy, Charles finds time to give back to his community and those in need. Just last year, Charles celebrated his birthday by gathering his friends to clean up the trash along Oracle Road. He also gathered gifts for the Angel Tree program and has packed food for people in impoverished countries and participated in the 30-hour famine to raise awareness of hunger. Charles, we are so proud of you, as you are our spotlight on youth this evening, and we just can't wait to see what your future holds. Congratulations, young man. And congratulations, Mom.
Are there other council reports this evening? Seeing none, we'll move on to the town manager's report. Ms. Jacobs.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I just want a quick announcement to our community that our pavement preservation program is starting in the very near future here. So pay attention and look for the signs on your street, and do follow our directions about not parking on the street so that we can get your roads paved. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I'm going to read kind of a preamble here at the beginning of our meeting. Of course, we're grateful that you've joined us this evening. We're admittedly in transition, and now that we've returned to in-person meetings to this newly renovated council chambers, the town has modified its public comment procedures. In lieu of Zoom, public meetings will return to the usual live stream format on the town's website. and Zoom will only be utilized for public comment when there is a public hearing. Those wishing to speak through Zoom at a public hearing must register at least 24 hours in advance by filling out a virtual speaker request card. Those wishing to speak in person can fill out a blue card located at the back of the room and hand it to the town clerk. Complete details on this new process can be found on the town's website as well as in the instruction section at the end of each meeting agenda. To watch and or listen to the public meeting online, please visit orovalleyaz.gov and click on the blue Meetings and Agendas button. This is time for call to audience. I don't have any blue cards for call to audience, so we'll proceed with our agenda. The first item of presentations, Mr. Standish.
Proclamation, Diaper Need Awareness Week.
And I believe Shannon Roberts, CEO of the Diaper Bank of Southern Arizona, is with us this evening. Okay. What's your name?
Shannon Roberts.
Okay, thank you. So this is Diaper Need Awareness Week, and Shannon, we're grateful that you've joined us this evening. Whereas diaper need, the condition of not having a sufficient supply of clean diapers to keep babies and toddlers clean, dry, and healthy, can adversely affect the health and well-being of babies, toddlers, and their families. And national surveys and research studies report that 1 in 3 families struggles with diaper need, and 48% of families delay changing a diaper to extend their supply. And infants and toddlers go through 6 to 12 diapers each day during the 2 to 3 years they wear diapers. And purchasing enough diapers to keep a baby or toddler clean, dry, and healthy can consume 14% of a low-wage family's post-tax income, making it difficult to provide the necessary supply. And during the COVID-19 pandemic, diaper banks across the country saw enormous increases in demand for diapers and expanded their distribution of diapers by an average of 86%. And whereas the residents of Oro Valley recognize that diaper need is a public health issue, and addressing diaper need can lead to economic opportunity for families and communities across the state and improved health for children, thus ensuring all children and families have access to the basic necessities required to thrive and reach their full potential. Now, therefore, I, Joseph C. Winfield, Mayor of Oro Valley, do hereby proclaim the week of September 27th through October 3rd, 2021, as Diaper Need Awareness Week in the town of Oro Valley. And we would like to thank all of the diaper banks, their staff, volunteers, and donors for their service during the crisis, and encourage the residents of Oro Valley to donate generously to diaper banks, diaper drives, and those organizations that collect and distribute diapers to those struggling with diaper needs so that all of Oro Valley's children and families can thrive and reach their full potential. Shannon, I'd like to invite you to come up, and I can present to you this proclamation, and if you'd like to speak, you may.
Mayor, council, and staff, first off, I'd like to say thank you for your generous and unwavering support of the mission and vision of the Diaper Bank. The work we do is very important. It helps people live a life of dignity when all hope is gone. So receiving this proclamation is just not acknowledgement. It also demonstrates that you all believe in the work that we do, and we thank you and the citizens in the town of Oro Valley for your continued support. Thanks again.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Mr. Standish, item two of presentations.
Town of Oro Valley, fiscal year 2021, financial update through June 2021.
Right. If we could bring up the, there we go. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, for the opportunity to present to you tonight. This is our unaudited preliminary financial update for the full fiscal year now under our belts. I'm pleased to report that we did finish strongly in all of our funds as anticipated and as we've been presenting throughout the fiscal year, really outperforming across the board in several areas. So. We will jump right in. We'll cover the usual funds that we do tonight, which will be the general fund, highway fund, and our community center fund. So just a disclaimer to start, these are unaudited figures. The auditors are actually on site this week doing their final field work. So we'll be finalizing numbers here in the next couple of months, but these numbers should be pretty close to final. So. But we did just want to mention that there could be some adjustments before all is said and done. Next slide, please. So we'll start off with the general fund, looking at our revenues. You can see the strong performance that we've been talking about throughout the fiscal year and our local sales taxes and our state shared revenue categories. Local sales taxes finishing about 20% over budget, or about $3.7 million. We, as you recall, were very conservative with some of our numbers, not knowing the impact of COVID, but our retail collections really performed very well throughout the pandemic, and they continue to do so, as well as our online collections have been strong the full fiscal year. So, and our state shared revenues, state shared sales taxes performed well compared to budget throughout the fiscal year. We also had some overage in our vehicle license tax revenues. Collections, those two areas driving up that overage came in about $1.2 million over budget. You can see our charges for services at just under $2 million for the fiscal year. We've been talking about that throughout the year. You know, obviously impacts from COVID on our parks and rec revenues as well as our fare box revenues for transit explains that slight variance there. Licenses and permits, we finished the fiscal year at approximately 498 single-family residential permits issued. And looking back, it appears that is the highest number of permits issued since 2004-2005 timeframe, just for perspective. So came in more than double the budget, about $1.7 million over budget from that strong residential activity as well as commercial. Our grant revenues, you can see the large budget overage there, that's really due entirely to the first payment of our ARPA funding, which was about $7.6 million that came in right before we ended the fiscal year. So that is the reason for the budget overage there. And then the all other kind of pulls everything else in. It's our intergovernmental revenue, so our IGA with the RTA for transit services, as well as transfers into the general fund from other funds, our interest income, and then some miscellaneous revenue. Really what's driving that shortfall there, about $600,000, is almost entirely the RTA reimbursement for transit, just impacted by COVID and the change up there with the services and the reimbursements that we were billing for. Also with the transfer into the general fund, as you know, we've been budgeting the $120,000 repayment from the community center fund. We have discontinued that transfer now in order to provide capacity in the community center fund for our parks and rec bond issuance going forward. So you will see when we get to the community center that transfer was not made. All in all, general fund revenues came in about 31% over budget, or $13.5 million. Again, that's really being driven by the first half of our ARPA payment, but the strong performance in local sales tax and state shared revenue as well, and the license and permits category. So overall, very positive. Next slide, please. We decided to throw this chart on there just to kind of take a look at our sales taxes in the general fund and how they've been performing the last few years. The red line you'll see on there is kind of when COVID hit and shutdowns began. But you can really see how, aside from a hotel bed tax, which is that kind of yellow line down there at the bottom, obviously no surprise there, those revenues were impacted quite a bit. But you can see everything else performing quite well throughout throughout the period. The blue line for construction, you can see the bump ups there from the permitting activity. Utilities carried itself fine throughout the fiscal year. Restaurant and bar, a little bit of an impact there from COVID, but really not to the extent that we had feared. And then you can see that we went ahead and threw the Wayfair ruling on there, and when that became effective, that was the Supreme Court decision saying that online sales are taxable because that all other category encompasses our remote collections, and those are rocking and rolling. They're really coming in strong, so that's the reason for that bump there. Next slide, please. Moving on to the expenditure side in the general fund, some savings there in personnel. You can see they came in about 4% under budget, or $1.1 million. That's due to some vacancy savings. Some of the good chunks of that, just for a little bit of explanation, savings in transit. Obviously, with COVID and not functioning fully, there's a big chunk of budget variance that we saw there. But also just savings kind of sprinkled throughout other departments. We had a we had capacity for a school resource officer at Lehman Academy. As you know, that did not come to fruition. There were revenues budgeted on the revenue side as well. So overall, it was a wash in the fund. But obviously, that position was not filled, so you would see that savings as well. Moving on to O&M, we did have some savings in O&M. It's about $1.5 million coming in below budget at the end of the fiscal year. As you know, we kind of started off some of the spending slow in the first half of the fiscal year, not knowing still kind of the full impact of COVID and just kind of being cautious. And so some hold off there and some carryover into the coming fiscal year. But also some of the projects that we budgeted as a result of freed up capacity from the CARES funding. So the council chambers renovation, for example, that was actually budgeted in O&M as an O&M building repair and maintenance project. It really belonged more appropriately in capital. And so those expenditures have been classified accordingly in capital. And so that explains the budget offset there. And then our capital, like I just mentioned, slight overage there, but that's just due to relabeling, reclassing some of those projects accordingly. Transfers out, those came in on budget. Those are our transfers to the debt service fund to make payments on our debt service, and then our three annual transfers to the CIP fund for capital projects. All in all, in the general fund on the expenditure side came in about 6% under budget, or $2.5 million. And again, that's being driven by the personnel and O&M savings that you see above there. Next slide. This is our chart. Pulling the revenues and expenditures onto one slide, you can kind of see performance. You see the gray for prior year, and then the orange is our current year performance compared to budget. So we ended the fiscal year with a surplus in the general fund of about $15 million. We had budgeted to spend about $1.2 million of our fund balance. We're looking to end the year at about $35.8 million as an ending balance in the general fund for fiscal year 2021. That's about 85% of our budgeted expenditures, and that exceeds our council 25% policy by just over $25 million. Moving on to the highway fund and the revenues, licenses and permits, those are road permits. Those came in slightly over budget by about $12,000. The state grants, we've talked about those before. Those are the reimbursements for our LaToya project. So that was largely completed last fiscal year, actually, I think it was about December in the fiscal year 2021. I do apologize, but finished on track, finished earlier, and then so we didn't have quite as many reimbursements associated with that project as we thought we would have for our personnel costs. So you can see that variance there. The state shared revenues, our HERF gas tax revenues, those came in strong for the fiscal year, coming in about 7% over budget, or about $255,000. And then the all other is smaller categories such as interest income and some other small miscellaneous revenues that hit that fund. All in all, for the highway fund, came in about 2% over budget on the revenues, or about $76,000. Again, really being driven by the strong performance with the HERF revenues. Next slide, please. The expenditure side of the house, so the personnel, we talked about the reimbursements on the state grants for our personnel costs for La Cholla, so this is the offset to that, the temporary personnel with the project having finished. They left employment with the town, so we did see some personnel savings. O&M, a little bit of slight savings there, just based on various line items, kind of sprinkled throughout the O&M, field supplies and that kind of thing. And then capital, obviously, is the big chunk there. That's due to our CIP project timing, so we did carry over the Lambert Lane overlay project. So that's the bulk of the difference there. In total for the highway fund, expenditures came in about $500,000 under budget. That's really due to the carryover of the Lambert Lane project, as well as the personnel savings that I mentioned. Here's the chart for the highway fund, revenues and expenditure side, compared to the prior year and to the budget. We ended the fiscal year in the highway fund with a surplus of about $424,000. We did budget to use fund balance of about $160,000, so outperformed compared to budget there. We're looking at ending the fiscal year at about $1.2 million. In the highway fund going into fiscal year 21-22. Moving on to the community center fund, on the revenue side, contracted operating revenues, we've talked about those throughout the fiscal year, performed very well throughout the pandemic. All in all, those came in about 13% over budget. That's due to our golf and member-related revenues. On the town operating side, COVID impacts there, is what's driving that. Those were disruptions from when the facility was closed, as well as some declined demand from member dues. Other revenues, that's the half-cent sales tax, as well as our HOA contributions, our interest income, and some smaller miscellaneous revenues. Our half-cent sales tax performed very well in the fund, coming in over budget. That's what's driving most of that difference that you see there of about $460,000. All in all, for the community center fund, the revenues came in about 7% over budget at about $7.6 million. And that's really, again, due to the strong revenues on the golf side from our contractor, as well as our half-cent sales tax collections. Expenditures in the community center fund. Contractor expenditures came in about 3% over budget. That is really due entirely to costs associated with the push golf course. Those were roughly about $200,000. And as you recall, this was a 36-hole budget. So they did have to incorporate those expenditures into their actuals. So if you were to back that off, they actually did come in under budget. On the town side of things, so we had some savings from the closures, both personnel and O&M. So you can see those dollars compared to actuals there came in about $140,000 under budget. Capital outlay, the big chunk of budget variance there, about $980,000 under budget, is due to the rollover, the golf course irrigation project. So what is in the fund in actuals through June was design costs for the project. The transfers out, I'd mentioned with the general fund, the budget variance there of $120,000, we did not make that scheduled transfer from the community center fund to the general fund. Instead, preserving capacity and fund balance in the community center fund for the parks and rec bonds moving forward. All in all, community center fund expenditures came in about $1.1 million under budget. That's due to primarily the CIP carryover, as well as the transfers and then some operating savings. Here's a chart for the community center fund, revenues and expenditures. We ended the year with a surplus of about $1.8 million. We had budgeted to add to the fund balance of about $220,000. And we're looking at ending the fiscal year 2021, the community center fund, of about $2.7 million for fund balance. That is it for our presentation. We'll take any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gomez. Council questions? Council Member Bowen?
Thank you, Wendy. I have a question about licenses and permits. I noticed we were about double what we projected. How much of that is attributed to more expensive permits, or is it simply we had twice as many permits as we expected to have?
Let me take a look at just take a look at the residential versus commercial. If there were, you know, not being an expert in this area, but I know there's certain years where we have more custom homes versus the developments where kind of all homes are similar. I know sometimes we see some variances there. But the budget, you know, for single-family residential permits was I think we did 225 is where we ended up landing, versus 498. So, you know, I don't know if it was due to changes in permits per se, but just the sheer activity, I would venture to guess, is what drove that. Just, you know, we remember we had built this budget, this revenue budget, back in March of 2020, and really just wanted to be very cautious, you know, not knowing what would happen with the shutdowns and, you know, assuming wisely that housing activity and building activity could tank potentially. But we see it absolutely did not. So, but we can get further information on that if you would like.
And then one other question regarding how do we do the year-end projections, you know, early in the fiscal year, for example, you know, where August and September and October? Because I noticed you guys had a really challenging year this year. The year-end projection was all over the place and was mainly growing. Is there any thought on maybe for next year that we could consider that the early years, they need to be qualified, the early fiscal months need to be qualified in terms of the year-end that we predict? Because I believe we were predicting at one point maybe $1 million surplus in September and October, and it kept growing. And that was a concern for me. How do we know, how do we gauge early in the year in a reliable way without qualifying it pretty heavily what we think our year-end surplus is going to be or deficit?
Yeah. You know, I think fiscal year 2021 was kind of an anomaly, if you will. We were a little more conservative with the revenues, not knowing with COVID. And so I think those variances are unusual. If I had to guess, going back and comparing, we do tend to budget conservatively anyway, but we do meet and get pretty in-depth information from Community and Economic Development on their projections for permitting, but, you know, they wisely are conservative as well in their planning. You know, we'd rather under-promise and over-deliver, but I would venture to guess that fiscal year 2021 was kind of an anomaly in terms of those budget overages. That if we went and looked back at our previous fiscal years, you'd see outperformance because we do tend to do that. But I don't think it would be to the extent that you saw here.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you, Ms. Gomez. What is the bottom line surplus in all the funds combined for fiscal year 2021?
Take a look. We have our attachment D that we include for all of our funds. And this is going to be preliminary, again, with the numbers not having been finalized yet, but bear with me. I thought I brought that in with me tonight, but I may not have it. But if you would refer to attachment D on the attachments, there is a... Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You can see the columns in gray on the attachment, total in, total out. That's what I'd call a very, very rough estimate because... you know, again, we've got the enterprise funds, and those are treated in a slightly different accounting manner than our governmental funds are. But that can give you kind of a rough idea of revenues versus expenditures. You see $106 million compared to $87.7 million.
Okay, so what is the number then for that total budget surplus?
Budget surplus, I'd have to get back to you on that, Vice Mayor. I don't have that number compared to budget with me tonight, but we can get that for you.
Is it just a subtraction between the 106 to the 87? Is that...
Well, just to clarify what you're asking, are you asking what the $106 million in revenues is compared to the revenue budget, or are you just looking at
net revenues versus expenditures.
Yeah, net revenues versus expenditures. That what you would call the year-end budget surplus.
Yeah, again, I'd probably want to take a look at that and get back to you, because this is just actuals to actuals, the 106 million versus 87.7. But if we wanted to kind of take a look at budget, I'd want to jump back and grab those figures and do that comparison accordingly.
Okay, thanks.
Councilmember Solomon.
So, Wendy, from looking at those numbers, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like COVID was an incredible windfall for us. He just called me. See, I'm used to it. As far as our finances go, it looks like we got an enormous amount of money in due to COVID, and it's pushed our surpluses and savings account way up. Is that correct?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, I think that's a fair statement.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I'm not seeing any other questions. Ms. Gomez, I'd take my finger off this. I'll get it down. Included in our packet was the Conquistador cash flow statement, C2.
Yes.
I know that wasn't part of the presentation. I did have a few questions this evening about it.
Sure.
Yeah. So looking at C2, at the year-to-date actuals at the bottom of that, it's $664,688. Can you tell us of that amount, how much of that includes the Push Golf Course?
Sure, Mr. Mayor. The Push expenses are about $200,000 for the full fiscal year, and those are incorporated in that figure of $665,000.
And so we could subtract that $200,000. If we were wanting to get, what I'm interested in is the 36 holes of golf.
That's so, fair, Mr. Mayor, yes. Yeah.
So if we minus $200,000, we're at $464,000 plus or minus.
That's correct.
This doesn't include the contributions from our homeowners association, the $125,000. Is that?
It does not, Mr. Mayor.
So we could subtract that out. So now we're down to 330-some thousand. I think that's pretty significant in terms of the success of our 36 holes of golf. So that represents the actual subsidy, tax subsidy, plus or minus. We had also, as part of this, identified sales tax attributed to. Do you happen to know what that? So what we're talking about is sales tax that's generated through our golf operations. That would be used against the expenses tied to golf. But any idea what that might be?
That's correct, Mr. Mayor. Those are estimated about $83,000.
Really? That's significant. So that's getting us close to $240,000. I just have to compliment Ms. Diaz-Trahan, Indigo Golf. This is just incredibly good news. And I think speaks well to your leadership, management, the management of Indigo Golf. And I don't know that it's necessarily maybe reflected in this, but the Overlook Restaurant, historically, we were having $10,000 a month deficits. Do I understand correctly that they actually turned a profit this past year?
They did, Mr. Mayor, a very slight profit.
Yeah. Slight profit is better than $120,000 loss. So I want to compliment everyone involved with the operations of our 36 holes of golf. I think that's tremendous. So thank you. Any additional questions? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Gomez. We appreciate your presentation.
You're quite welcome.
We'll go to the consent agenda. I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Vice Mayor Barrett. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Thank you. We'll go to the regular agenda.
Public hearing, discussion, and possible action regarding an application for a Series 14 private club liquor license for Stone Canyon Club, located at 14200 North Hohokam Village Place.
And Mr. Standish will provide a report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. So as stated in the agenda title, an application for the new Series 14 private club liquor license was submitted by agent Andrea Dahlman-Lukowitz for Stone Canyon Club, located at 14200 North Hohokam Village Place. Ms. Lukowitz has submitted all the necessary paperwork to the Town of Oro Valley and to the Arizona Department of Liquor Licenses and Control, and they have paid all the fees associated with applying for a liquor license. In accordance with state law, the application was posted at the premises for 20 consecutive days, and there were no protests received during that time period. The Oro Valley Police Department has completed their standard background check on the Stone Canyon and Agent Lukowitz, and the Oro Valley Police Department is recommending approval. And with that, staff overall is recommending approval of the liquor license. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Council questions? Seeing none, this is, there is a public hearing associated with this agenda item. I will now open the public hearing. I have no blue cards and there's no virtual speakers for this item. I'm going to close the public hearing. Again, any discussion? So, would someone like to make a motion?
I would move approval.
Okay, you want to read that?
I'll second that.
Okay.
Just a second. I move to recommend approval of the issuance of a Series 14 liquor license to the Arizona Department of Liquor Licenses and Control for Andrea Dahlman-Lukowitz and principals for Stone Canyon Club, located at 14200 North Hohokam Village Place.
And it was seconded by Councilmember Jones Ivy. Any discussion?
Thanks, Joe. Mm-hmm.
Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed say nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go to item 2.
Presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding resolution number R21-47, authorizing the execution and delivery of an agreement, a trust agreement, a continuing disclosure certificate, an obligation to purchase agreement, and forms of related obligation documents, approving a preliminary official statement, approving the sale, execution, and delivery of excise tax revenue obligations, tax-exempt Series 2021, evidencing a proportionate interest of the owners thereof in an agreement between the Town of Oro Valley, Arizona, and a trustee, and authorizing the taking of all other actions necessary to the consummation of the transactions contemplated by this resolution and declaring an emergency.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. Just prior to Mr. Gephardt, our CFO, will be making a presentation, I'd like to just simply say that, you know, tonight this really represents a culmination of previous decisions made by this council relative to this item that was included in our FY21-22 budget, and also in terms of prioritizing projects. Mr. Gephardt.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Tonight I'd like to present for your review, consideration, and approval a $25 million Parks and Recreation bond issuance. Staff is requesting final approval to move forward with the issuance. I've got a brief presentation for you this evening that I hope you find helpful in your decision. If we can bring the slide presentation up, please. Thank you. So the process the town followed in bringing us to this point is shown on this slide. And as you'll recall, in April 2021, we held a public hearing on broadening the use of the Community Center Fund half-cent transaction privilege tax. In May of 2021, Ordinance Number 21-05 was passed, superseding Ordinance Number 14-17, broadening the use of revenue from the half-cent transaction privilege tax to additional parks and recreation projects. In June of 2021, the Town Council adopted the town budget for the current fiscal year, which included a proposed $25 million bond issuance funded through the broadened use of the half-cent transaction privilege tax. And then in July of 2021, Town Council identified specific projects to be funded through the proposed bond issuance. Next slide. As a review of what projects were approved by Town Council, Community Center Fund, Community Center exterior improvements are included, as are Naranja Park amenities and improvements, and several multi-use path connections. The Community Center exterior improvements include irrigation replacement for the Conquistador and Cañada golf courses, tennis court surface replacement, and resurfacing or reconfiguring of the Community Center parking lot. The Naranja Park amenities include two multi-use fields, a splash pad, pickleball and basketball courts, a pump track, a skate park, new paved paths, ramadas, restrooms, and associated infrastructure. As a reminder, at least 50% of bond proceeds are to be directed towards these amenities. Multi-use path connections include a path on La Cañada Drive between Lambert and Naranja, a path on Naranja Drive between La Cañada and the Naranja Park entrance, and a path connecting the CDO Wash to James D. Craig Park. So the question gets asked, why issue bonds for these projects? And the first reason is equity. We are all aware of situations when someone who pays into a project never gets the benefit of use of the project due to the individual moving away, passing away, etc. Bond financing aligns revenue received for repayment of the debt issued, so the real-time utilization of the project So if you have a town resident who decides to sell their home or move to another state, the new resident who buys their home would theoretically begin paying town sales taxes and contribute toward debt repayment while also receiving the benefit of the new improvements to services. Secondly, there is a quicker disposition of projects. Bond financing allows the town to make desired improvements faster. This provides additional services, additional service amenities to residents, and hopefully increases their enjoyment and satisfaction of living in Oro Valley. And finally, we sit in a unique opportunity, a unique window of time, where we are seeing significant increases to inflation, while the cost of borrowing is still extremely low. My next two slides illustrate the point, but basically, inflation has not yet impacted borrowing rates, which provides both immediate and long-term savings to the town for the spread between inflation and the cost of capital. Certainly, from a risk standpoint, the quicker the town can complete the desired projects, the more value, both economically and qualitatively, will be received by the town. So this first chart shows historical 10-year treasury yields going back to 1970 and even prior to that. I included this chart because the 10-year treasuries would be a starting point or foundation for the interest rates that our bonds would be pegged at, especially as it relates to the out years of repayment. What you see here is, from a historical perspective, rates are still extremely attractive and low. It is certainly not a bad time to be issuing debt, which we saw with our PSPRS bond issuance in July. Currently, rates are at 1.91% for the 10-year treasury. This next chart shows national inflation rates by month going back to 2014. And as you see, inflation has been contained until really the past 5 or 6 months, when we see some significant increases. Well, I think many hope that these increases would be a blip. The expectation now is that inflation will persist due in large part to the amount of stimulus money pumped into the economy. A lot of that money has yet to be spent and is creating a situation where a lot more money is competing for roughly the same level of projects, goods, and services. This is driving up the costs of those goods and services. Looking forward, I think it is more likely that borrowing rates will increase as the Fed begins reducing the amount of purchases that they are of U.S. Treasuries and also simultaneously raising rates. With respect to inflation, again, I think where we are at nationally, it's going to be a new normal for the foreseeable future, these 5.6%. I think that's where we're at currently, about 5.6% last month. I think that's going to be about the new normal moving forward for inflation until the federal stimulus funds are exhausted and the money supply tightens. Mr. Mayor, this concludes my presentation. I would be more than happy to address any questions that you may have. We also have our financial advisor on Zoom this evening, as well as our bond counsel. They're available for any technical questions the council has that I may not be able to answer. Thank you for your time, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Gephardt. And I will be taking blue cards, but I'm going to go to council questions at the moment. Questions, council? Okay. Council Member Jones-Ivey.
Mr. Gephardt, let me see if I understand what you just said. This is going to be a $25 million bond, and the interest rate on this is going to be 1.19%?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Council Member Jones-Ivey, Mr. Mayor, members of council, if I may. We don't know what the interest rate is going to be, but I can say with pretty strong assurance that we're going to be in the low 2% range. If you'll recall, several months ago, we issued PSPRS taxable bonds, and typically taxable bonds they carry a little bit of a premium because they're taxable. So the investors require a little bit higher rate in relation to tax-exempt bonds. These would be tax-exempt bonds. So I think if you'll recall, our total all-in cost of issuance for those PSPRS bonds over the entire term was 2.39%. These would be 20-year bonds, so they would be a little bit longer in term, but they are tax-exempt. So all of those factors taken into account, we're going to be in the low twos, between roughly, I think, 2% and 2.2%. Obviously, we're going to try to drive that down as low as possible with through supply and demand and trying to put forth as attractive of a product as possible for investors.
Other Councilmember Solomon?
Yes. This is $25 million for 20 years. What is the total amount at the end of 20 years, including interest and all the fees and associated costs with issuing the bond?
Thank you for the question, Councilmember Solomon, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. So we're estimating the all-in cost of this issuance. Let me bring up that. I've got a repayment schedule here. Just give me a second. About $31.5 million with interest.
Sorry, forgot to push the button. We're still getting used to this new system here. Now, the town of Oro Valley, Arizona financial and budgetary policies. On policy one, it says for every proposed capital project, all operation, maintenance, and replacement costs shall be fully costed. So what are the maintenance and operation and replacement costs for each one of these projects?
Mr. Council Member Solomon, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I don't have a cost estimate as of yet, as I think primarily due to we're still working through exactly what this final project list is going to be. We do have the list, but there is concern that with inflation, we're not going to be able to complete all of the amenities or projects that have been approved. So I don't really have a good estimate for you this evening. You know, that's certainly something that we could look at and try to bring back for a council report after we've done that study and analysis.
Well, and that would seem to imply that this is a pretty big wish list, that we're obviously not going to be able to afford all of it, particularly when we take into account maintenance and operating costs. The other thing that policy says is All projects, both ongoing and proposed, shall be prioritized based on analysis of current needs and resource availability. In your presentation, in addition to the community center and golf course irrigation and the some of the trails or in the paths we have, there were 10 other items listed. So who's going to prioritize these? And a second part of that is, each one of these items going to come to council for an individual vote on whether that item, based once we have the full financials, and we know that, well, it may cost $1 million to put in, but the maintenance is going to be $250,000 a year because it's a high maintenance item for 20 years. So that, you know, if you could provide the answer to those.
Thank you, Councilmember Solomon, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I'm actually going to defer that question to the town manager, as that is not really a financial issue. It's more of a prioritization issue for the town. Thank you.
Certainly, Mr. Mayor. Councilmember Solomon, as you know, we have been given some very clear direction on the part of council as to what it is that you want us to accomplish. Right now, we have estimates. And I think, as Mr. Gephardt said, we're not certain we'll be able to get everything on the list, but until we get everything designed and get good cost estimates together, we're not going to know. If we are not able to get everything done on the list, I will come back to council. We also have the opportunity for, because this project is going to go over multiple fiscal years, and so part of this may be addressed in the budget process next fiscal year. Let's say we're short, you know, I don't know, $2 million or something like that, that we can then, we'll have to rebudget the bond proceeds that we haven't used. And if we have the capacity, and as you know, we have a pretty strong excess reserves, we can add that additional, and that would be a recommendation I would bring forward for council consideration. So, you know, my goal is to get everything on the list that the council has given us accomplished. Whether we can do that all in with this $25 million or whether it will require supplemental resources in next fiscal year or the following remains to be seen. But we haven't started on the design yet, and or rather in earnest, particularly at the Naranja Park. And that is certainly foremost in our analysis: is can we do all this, how much is it going to cost, and we hope that our designer will also have some suggestions on how we can keep our costs down, what might work best in terms of what comes first and what doesn't, the timing perspective. It makes more sense to do these things first versus the other.
Well, it seems like we've got the classic cart before the horse here. We haven't done any planning on it. We don't know what the maintenance costs are. We haven't put a priority on any of these 10-plus projects. We haven't analyzed which project is going to have the most impact for the cost. And additionally, I will comment on the fact that this list does not follow a statistically valid survey of what the community said they wanted spent on. And we went through this in detail on July 7th, so I don't really care to repeat it. If people want to, I'm happy to go through item by item and what their ranking was and what this council included in the $25 million. But it's fair to say it certainly ignored the community input. So with all these combinations, I don't see how this council can consider moving forward with this $31.5 million bond when there's so many unknowns, and we're basically saying we're just going to spend whatever it costs. Along those lines, there's another important thing we need to bring up. And it basically says in our policy that we need to look at all the needs, capital improvements of the community. We have a police station that is wholly inadequate to serve our police department and public safety of this community. We've known for years now we need a new police facility. Those are large amounts. That's a large amount of money. We haven't even discussed whether that may be a higher priority or a higher need for the community than adding some more playgrounds or a bike track or a BMX path. So I don't understand. Once again, we've got the cart before the horse here. We haven't looked at this on a community-wide need, and yet we're looking at voting tonight to spend over $31.5 million with a ton of uncertainties. So once again, I find that very problematic, and there's no way I could support this item for those following reasons.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. I appreciate the charts and graphs that you shared with us. I think it's valuable to look at that all-in cost of $31.5 million, and that's certainly something would want to look at. Do you have any numbers where that would be adjusted for projected inflation? And we could take a look at as well what it kind of is in present day value, similarly to how we did with the police pension.
Thank you, Vice Mayor Barrett, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. That number is a debt repayment schedule number, and it really doesn't get hardened until we go out to market and find out what the interest rate environment is. We also do have a little bit of leeway in terms of the term of the repayment structure and when we start paying principal, et cetera, that can have an impact there. Basically, what I presented with that $31.5 million is hopefully what we consider a very conservative estimate. Again, if interest rates come in a little bit lower and the market's competitive when we actually do issue the bonds, that number could decline a little bit. So that is kind of a real real time annual debt service number that includes both principal and interest repayment for the bonds. I don't think there's necessarily any discount. I mean, certainly we could discount the out years and whatever, try to figure what that would look like. Right. But generally speaking, that is what the payments due would be moving forward over the entire 20-year repayment structure.
Right. I'm just referring to earlier in your presentation where you referenced potentially 4% and 5% inflation moving forward. You know, maybe when this gets hardened up, we could also receive a little bit analysis taking that potential inflation into account.
Yeah, Vice Mayor, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, the inflation wouldn't necessarily impact the debt repayment structure. Again, that gets hardened up. The inflation becomes an issue if we punt, if council decides to punt this issue to later on down the road. Those projects, obviously, that we would be bond financing or utilizing pay-as-you-go as an option. Again, those are kind of the two primary options, right? Utilizing pay-as-you-go or punting down to a future bond issuance is almost most certainly going to cost the town a significant sum of money additionally, both in terms of inflation and in terms of interest rate risk, interest rate exposure from rates going up.
Okay, thank you. Kind of playing off of what you just mentioned about if we don't go ahead and do this, so if we don't move forward with issuing a bond to be able to complete Naranja Park and some other desired amenities such as the golf course irrigation, community center parking lot, tennis courts, etc., what is our alternative proposal? If all of the half-cent sales tax were to stay where it had been, which I know we've already crossed that bridge, but we would be taking approximately how much per year from the general fund in order to complete some of those projects moving forward over the next 20 years?
Vice Mayor Barrett, Mr. Mayor, members of council, it would be jumping back into the situation where we were in. A lot of these projects obviously would certainly be delayed or deferred well into the future if ever being accomplished as, alternative demands on town funds were necessary. Obviously we could have changes in council direction. So there's just so much variability there. I would hazard to guess at what that might look like. If it's the council's desire to move forward with these projects, this is really the most viable option. If it's the council's desire to not move forward and to kind of go back into more of a pay-as-you-go type structure, then obviously a lot of these projects simply, it's very likely that they won't be accomplished anytime soon.
But previously we were paying about $1.5 million a year from the general fund or the capital, the CIP funds, towards things like Naranja Park and these types of improvements. And so by doing this in the bond, that will then free up that $1.5 million or so a year that we were spending or would have spent moving forward that could then be spent on other high priority projects in the general fund. Is that basically correct? Assuming we wanted to do the projects.
Vice Mayor, Mr. Mayor, members of council, that is correct. Obviously, the council has wide discretion and authority to utilize that $1.5 million however they choose. I think, you know, again, there is some sense with inflation, and as we start to, you know, design these projects and start to wrap our arms around final cost projections of what this might look like, there's a strong sense that that $1.5 million will likely need to be tapped into for completion on an annual basis, or it could be utilized, as Mr. Solomon referenced, for maintenance and operational purposes to keep the parks operating at a satisfactory level for town residents.
Right. Thank you. Okay. I just want to reference quickly one comment about costing and understanding the cost of maintenance and upkeep throughout the future. And maybe this is more a question for Ms. Diaz-Trahan, but as part of our Parks and Recreation needs assessment, I attended hours of meetings about that needs assessment and looked through numerous documents and spreadsheets. And while I understand that those numbers are certainly preliminary, we did in fact have a professional consultant take a look at what those long-term costs would be. And, you know, obviously those need to be finalized, but it's not as though there was no analysis done. Is that right? Or can you shed some more light on that, Ms. Diaz-Trahan?
Yes, thank you, Vice Mayor Barrett. So within the master plan, there was the concept plan for Naranja Park, and it was identified as a phase one that came in right around $10 million. Again, these were estimates. Based on that, according to the master plan, let me find the correct page, on page 124, let me get there. Well, let me take a step back. Phase one included two additional oversized multi-sport, the panels, splash pad, roadway, and parking lot. It did not include pickleball courts, basketball courts, pump track, etc. So that was what was included. And let me get to page 24, excuse me. The general estimate in terms of increase in expenses offset by additional revenue, because the sport fields will provide an additional revenue, it was anticipated that would it be approximately $85,000 more a year.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I think that's my point, is that, okay, you know, I certainly saw those numbers, and I understand that they're preliminary and we need to get into that more, but there has been some analysis done on that. So thank you. That's the end of my questions. Thanks, Mr. Gephardt.
Mr. Gephardt, in your presentation, you spoke about some of the rationale behind this: intergenerational equity, quicker disposition of projects, low cost of capital relative to inflation. In regards to the implementing these projects is going to cost money, $31.5 million or so. If we, for example, have you had an opportunity to look at, say, the pay-as-you-go scenario in terms of what the potential to implement these projects, what that cost would look like over time?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Mr. Mayor, members of council. It's a very good question, but it's a very difficult question, if you can imagine, because you're kind of asking me to be Nostradamus and predict the future with some sort of certainty, and especially as it relates to inflation rates. And we don't really know what that looks like moving forward. I mean, I think historically, you know, over since the Great Recession, I think certainly the Fed has tried to keep their interest rate target at 2% from a national level. And of course, they, you know, they were very successful at doing that for a long, long time as we kind of came out of the Great Recession and then COVID hit and et cetera. And then all these stimulus monies started being pumped into the economy to get our economy back up and going. And we're seeing, again, not to repeat myself, but we're seeing a lot of those stimulus monies kind of sitting on the side. Certainly some of it's being spent, but there's a lot, you know, I'll reference the $7.7 million of ARPA money that just this past year, $15.4 million total that the town of Oro Valley is receiving over 2 years. We're not the only town that's receiving those funds. There are other cities and towns throughout the entire nation that are receiving those funds, and they're looking for eligible projects to be able to put that money to work, which is creating, again, a supply and demand issue nationally, or will create, will perpetuate the supply and demand issue nationally for these funds. There's just a lot, you know, in terms of how many contractors exist out there that are able to do these types of projects and work, that they're qualified, et cetera. There's kind of a limited number nationally. It certainly hasn't grown since COVID or even over the last several years. And so we've kind of got this same number of qualified contractors that are, you know, that they're getting, you know, hit with various projects, and they're being able to charge more because of that competition for their services. So, you know, I think, again, you have to look at this from a long-term perspective. Obviously, 20 years is a long time, and that's a difficult proposition. I don't know what inflation is going to average over the next 20 years. The question is inflation over that 20-year period going to be higher than our cost of issuance on these bonds, a little over 2%? I think I'm willing to take that bet. I'm not a betting man, but I'm willing to take that bet that that it is, that inflation is going to exceed our cost of issuance on those bonds. And if it does, that provides real savings to the town versus, you know, because we're losing that inflation we're losing the purchasing power on real dollars every single year in the town because inflation is eroding that purchasing power. So I think that's the best way, just conceptually, to think about that. I don't have any hard numbers. I mean, obviously, it's going to be subject to, you know, to wild guess. I'm not willing to kind of take it that far because whatever guess I provide is going to be wildly inaccurate.
Okay. I appreciate your forthrightness and honesty. Mr. Gephardt, what other town bonding needs do you foresee in the future?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Mayor, members of council. So, I think Councilmember Solomon referenced the police station, police facilities that are necessary. Our town police facilities, we've simply outgrown those. It's been an issue. It will continue to be an issue. That issue is not going away anytime soon. You know, I think with respect to that issue, bouncing that or comparing it to this bond issuance, this bond issuance has a dedicated revenue source, so it is not tapping into the general fund revenues of the town. We have our half-cent sales tax in our community center fund that will fully support this bond issuance, and especially moving forward, that is not going to be an issue, or I don't forecast it to be an issue. Certainly anything can happen. We could go into a depression and then maybe things change. But absent that, we've gone through a bond rating process, again, with respect to the PSPRS bonds and then also with respect to these bonds. And I'm not at liberty to say what our bond rating is with respect to these bonds, but I can tell you Our bonding capacity has not decreased. We have maintained the existing bonding capacity of the town. We will still be able to tackle those projects, those needs moving forward. This really has no impact on the ability of the town to address those needs in the future.
Yeah, so I think you've answered my follow-up question, and that was the issuance of this bond. Does that put in jeopardy these other bonding needs?
Not at all, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Mr. Gephardt, you mentioned that there are still ARPA funds that are available. Do we qualify to get any additional funds?
Councilmember Jones, were you done with your question?
I've got a follow-up, but go ahead.
Okay, so let me address that one first. Councilmember Jones-Ivy, I apologize for interrupting you there. I thought you were completed or done. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, no, those funds, the $15.4 million, those are pretty much hardened. Now, there are, you know, if you pay attention to the politics and whatever, there is an infrastructure bill that Congress is wrestling with. You know, there's potential that that there may be other grant opportunities moving forward from the federal government, but obviously those have not been completed yet. They're still in the works.
So these funds would not be available as grant funds for this issue that we're speaking of, our parks and recreation issues?
Councilmember Jones-Ivy, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, we are going to look at that. There are certain projects that that council approved, and I'm not, you know, I don't want to call those out specifically in this meeting, but there are certain projects that we will have discussions, active discussions with our auditors to see whether they are in compliance with ARPA regulations and guidance. And if they are, we will be able to utilize ARPA money, which is a good thing for the town. That frees up, again, bond resources to be able to do more on behalf of the town.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Councilmember Nicholson.
Jeff, how was the bonds issued? Are they giving us the whole $25 million, or do we pull sections out as we do construction, or how does that work? Or if they give us the full $25 million, if we can't use it right away, what do we do with those funds? Do they just sit there?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Councilmember Nicholson, members of council, Mr. Mayor. Those funds come as the bonds are issued. On the closing date, they are wired into a trustee account or into the a trustee account on behalf of the town. We are able to tap into those funds immediately upon issuance. And in terms of paying for projects or whatever, as those project expenditures come due, we're able to again tap into those resources. Now, there is a provision, because it is a tax exempt issuance, where we have to spend, I believe, 85% of the total proceeds within 3 years to not run afoul of IRS tax rules and regulations, and preserve the tax exempt status of the issuance. So that is something that we need to be cognizant of and aware of, but I don't think that's going to be an issue in this case.
Go ahead, Councilmember Nicholson.
So the whole idea of this whole agenda item is, you know, our financial shape a few years ago was good. The golf was costing us about $2.5 million. We brought it down to $200,000-$300,000. So we have that $2 million surplus. With this bond, a 20-year at roughly 2.2 or somewhere around that range, it'd be $120,000 a month, which sounds like a lot a month. It is, but it's $1.5 million. That should be covered by the amount that we've saved on the golf so far this year, right? And that's supposed to be same. And then one thing I want to mention, too, is like just with general inflation, in 20 years, let's say our town budget is $100 million, in 20 years, that budget is $264 million without growing the town or anything. So our inflation is going to go up. Our tax revenue is also going to go up. This bond rate is going to stay flat for 20 years. So as time goes on, the portion of that tax revenue that it uses up shrinks over the next 20 years, correct?
Councilmember Nicholson, Mr. Mayor, members of council, that's correct.
Thanks.
Okay, Mr. Gephardt, we have a blue card, so I'm going to, if you'll stand by, I'd like to invite Stephanie Mustaine to come to the podium. And if you could just state your name and whether you're a resident of Oral Valley, and you have 3 minutes, Ms. Mustaine.
Okay. My name is Stephanie Mustaine. I am a resident of Oral Valley. I've been a resident for 19 years. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak, Mr. Mayor and Council. I appreciate that. I have actually been in front of you more than once in regards to Park and Recs. My children have spoken at this podium as well, quite twice. He was 10 years old, he was 13 years old, and now he is 17 years old in high school. Parks and Rec as a whole continue to be a challenge for this community and for parents like myself in field space. We are a growing community. We have lots of kids that need places to play. We have aged out, but we have been a member of the Oral Valley Dolphins for over 10 years. We have been a member of the Oral Valley Little League organization for over 13 years and current members of Oral Valley Lacrosse for 8 years. My children are 20 years old, attending college in New York, a 17-year-old at Push Ridge, and a 15-year-old at Push Ridge. So clearly, my family at this point does not utilize the fields today as much as we did years to come, and often fought for places for them to even play. We are also members of the community center. We're not members of the golf because of our time commitment, but we use the golf facility quite a bit. And we thank you for everything that you guys have done up to this point. But the need is there. Go! I encourage you in October to go on a Saturday morning. We walk our dogs every Saturday morning. You can't find a spot on the grass at Naranja Park. There are five-year-olds playing. Go in the evening. There are tons of football, flag football, soccer, lacrosse going on. It is a constant need. I can speak for myself, and I can speak for many children in the aspect of my husband has coached Dolphins, lacrosse, high school football. I am a middle school tennis coach. I've coached soccer. I've coached everything. This changes kids' lives. Putting them on a sports field, giving them places to do their thing is changing. We saw it during COVID. We saw it when we took it away. This is what makes kids who they are. And even bike tracks, archery, I honestly will support it all because every kid has their own thing, and it is so, so important. So I would encourage you to support this bond, to not wait any longer to provide fields and facilities for all of our children and even people like myself. As I age, I'm still using the park. I'm walking the trail. I will say one of the best things I saw is the first time we walked into the Oral Valley Park after that the play structure was built. I couldn't count the number of kids that were on there because they were just so excited to play. Go any evening, they're playing while their siblings are playing. So I'm really just here in full support of the bond and full support of anything we can do for our children and our community in regards to sports. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are there any additional council discussions or questions? Vice Mayor Barrett?
I have discussion. Is that going to wait, or are we doing questions? Or
Questions.
Okay, I can wait my discussion then.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't understand.
Yeah, well, I'm not question, discussion. Go.
Okay, I just want to say that I think that you made a compelling financial case, Mr. Gephardt, and I really appreciate that. I think that our Parks and Recreation needs assessment that we've gone through for the past year involving significant amounts of staff effort, consultant effort, public participation, public meetings, has also made a compelling case for the need that we have for some of these recreational amenities in our community. When I talk to people about this, I like to tell them we would be able to do a lot of these amenities in our community, including for the golf course, the community center, the tennis courts, doing Naranja Park, for basically the same money that had previously been going to support only the community center and golf without raising any taxes. And I just really see that this would benefit our community. I can see for the future children, parents, and grandparents gathering together on fields to play and watch soccer, football, lacrosse, basketball, pickleball, tennis, and golf through the proceeds of this bond.
the ability to host tournaments that would benefit our community and in all those sports, a splash pad where our children can enjoy recreation during the 6 months of heat that we enjoy here in Arizona that makes it difficult to enjoy playgrounds during that time, and where people can cool off after playing a hot sport game on the field. A skate and bike park where teenagers and others can get productive outdoor exercise, and a multi-use path where citizens can bike, walk, safely push strollers, and be able to lead to and access our park network and system. Areas and amenities where residents can gather and socialize for years to come. And I think all of that could become possible through the successes that we've had in reducing the costs of golf, in changing the direction of the half-cent sales tax to broaden it and have it encompass even more, and being able to move forward with this bond and enact some of the vision of our Parks and Recreation Master Plan for our community. So, and I think that the interest rates of today make it a really compelling case for moving forward with it. So thank you for your presentation. That's my comment.
Councilmember Solomon?
I am certainly glad to hear that some on this council have finally come to realize that pay-as-you-go is not the right process. 3 years ago, prior council had approved bonding for the golf course irrigation community center improvements. However, when council changed, a majority insisted on only pay-as-you-go. How dare you think of bonding? In this short time, it's cost us several million dollars because of inflation and the cost of construction. So, yes, I am a big proponent for bonding for long-term use. The financial benefits are undebatable. I just wish people had realized that several years ago, and we could have saved millions and millions of dollars. Once again, my big objection is this does not follow the statistically valid survey that was touted time and time and time and time again through this council. Yet after all of that, that was not the way priorities were set. We have a priority item number 28 as one of our top priorities. So when you have that, along with not the true financial picture of what projects we can afford and what projects we can't, it is a bad way to put all of the taxpayers in debt. This is a debt. Make no mistake about it. Some people say, well, it's our only alternative. No, our alternative is we don't have to spend the $25 million. By the way, the bond issue for Naranja Park was defeated by the voters overwhelmingly just a few short years ago. And I'm surprised those people who worked so hard against that aren't here this evening. And we say, well, but this is not raising taxes. Oh, don't be mistaken about that. All you've done is shifted some tax money from one area to another area. This is going to cost money, and that's fine. The town provides services. But let's not try to hide the facts that this is not what the community asked for, and that this bond has rushed through and no real financial analysis has been done, and saying, oh, well, this won't affect our ability for a police station. Of course it will. Are you saying we can spend $32 million and it has no impact on the taxpayer, and then we can go and look at a $30 million police station and everything is fine with $60 million? So let's be fair about that. We just need to look at the overall picture and process through what the costs are and what the top priorities are. Our own policies state that, yet we haven't followed that.
I move to approve resolution number R21-47, authorizing the execution and delivery of an agreement, a trust agreement, a continuing disclosure certificate, an obligation to purchase agreement, and forms of related obligation documents, approving a preliminary official statement approving the sale, execution, and delivery of excise tax revenue obligations, tax-exempt series 2021, evidencing a proportionate interest of the owners thereof, in an agreement between the Town of Oro Valley, Arizona, and a trustee, and authorizing the taking of all other actions necessary to the consummation of the transactions contemplated by this resolution and declaring an emergency.
I'll second that, Mr. Mayor.
Seconded by Councilmember Jones Ivey.
Mr. Mayor, excuse me, I just wanted to remind the council that a declaration of an emergency does require a vote of 6-1, and that what would happen if that did not pass by 6-1 is that you'd have to re-vote, and then we wouldn't be able to go out for the bonds for 30 days. So a vote declaring the emergency would allow us to take advantage of the interest rates that are in place at this time. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you for that clarification. Any discussion? Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's been a long summer, and I'd like to remind everyone where we were on July 7th, 2021. We wrote an ordinance for the community center that mandated that we would spend $1.6 to $2.0 million on the community center due to a 0.5% sales tax. I'd like to remind everyone that we were over $2 million from the first year, and we're at $2.9 million. As someone who spent a lot more time sitting out there than sitting up here, I wondered, where was that money going? You know, why are these golf courses, which were open in 2015, so outrageously expensive to keep open? So I would like to say, I agree with Councilmember Solomon. We're on a path of uncertainty, but we always are. But the path we were previously on was far worse. We lost track of the community center fund. We saw very little improvement at the community center. No irrigation, no elevator. So I am greatly appreciative to the vice mayor and the mayor for putting us on a path of greater transparency and greater responsibility. And I'd like to remind Councilmember Solomon, our police center, our station across the parking lot, was just as small in 2015 when we thought this tax was a good idea. So I don't think we're being irresponsible in the slightest. We are playing the hand that we're dealt, and we're going to see some tangible benefits from the community center fund. We're going to see paths get built. We're going to see new infrastructure in Naranja Park that people are going to enjoy, as our speaker shared with us tonight. And I'm fully in favor of this. I just want everybody to remember, we are not being irresponsible. We're dealing very effectively, in my view, with the hand we've been dealt. Thank you.
Any more discussion? Councilmember Nicholson.
I just want to add, where was the financial analysis when we bought the golf course? There are several years where we didn't do anything with a golf course. We were just losing $2.5 million a year. We brought it down to $200,000-$300,000, and this bond is getting paid for that. We need a police station. You said it's worth $30 million. Gephardt, remember when I asked you how much we would save for the police pension if we got what our fund is supposed to get? Can you tell me how much that was?
Thank you, Councilmember Nicholson, Mr. Mayor, members of council. Those estimates vary. I mean, throughout, based upon my calculations, very, very conservative, again, based upon a 5.3% return on investment that the PSPRS plan would be earning over the next 16 or 17 years that those bonds would need to be repaid, about $9 or $10 million. But our financial advisor, Stiefel, calculates it at $16-17 million. And I've also run calculations with a 7.3% return, where that number balloons up to about, I believe, 25. I'd have to look at my spreadsheet again, but about 25 million. So there's again, it really depends on what the return on those underlying investments of the plan, what those are moving forward.
Thanks, Dave.
Any additional discussion? Councilmember Green.
I agree with a lot of what has been said tonight. I think I love to think about a city or a town that had all kinds of amenities for all kinds of people. I think that's terrific. But I think we did do a study, as Councilman Solomon refers to, the PROS study. And I would like to see us, before we jump into this, take a look at prioritizing the issues that we're going to pay for and looking at the maintenance cost of those and then coming back with a little harder number so that we know going forward what we're really dealing with. Right now, there's just a lot of uncertainty. We have feelings about what we want, whether it's a splash park or something else, but we also have a document that tells us what the people of Oro Valley wanted. And I'd like to see us compare those two documents before we go galloping off on a big debt.
Ms. Diaz-Trahan, the PROS consultant, the product or one of the products that resulted from that process was site plans, master plans for each of our parks, which included Naranja Park. Can you please explain to the council that process, how that master plan was arrived at and how it reflects the community participation as part of that process?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. So there was a variety of community feedback and engagement. And in terms of where the statistically valid survey ranking came in was an in total. With through the document, it also drilled down to age segmentation. So for example, if you looked at pickleball courts, the age segmentation of families with children under 16, pickleball courts didn't rise to the top, but yet it did rise to the top of the age segmentation that was over 55. So where that falls into the grand scale, it lands in about the medium sector. It doesn't mean it's medium for the entire community. It aggregates that way, but there's importance to each age segmentation. So if you look at, I'm looking at page 9, for example. We all know that trails came in top. Trails are important to all ages. Families, young families use them as Stephanie said, talked about earlier. But we also have a strong inventory of trails. And so the decision is, because something rises to the top, if we still have a strong inventory, do we invest in adding those or do we invest in maintaining those? The decision that was made was to invest in maintaining, for example, the golf courses. Golf courses rose high in the survey, but I would argue we don't need to invest in additional golf courses. We need to invest in the life cycle replacement. So there's a lot of variation within how to interpret the document. Furthermore, there is a section that addresses inventory. So if you look at the full inventory of what we have in our community, for example, we have sport fields. But looking at the usage, there is the desire to add additional sport fields. So it's you have to look at the document in total, and that's how they were placed within those concept plans. So Naranja Park obviously has the greatest opportunity to add new amenities. And so that's where the new amenities were identified. There was a plan that said remove the rectangle fields at Riverfront and add diamond fields. Well, then when we went back out to the community one last time, they didn't like that. So we reverted back and kept the rectangle fields and identified how we can do some maintenance in another place to, again, reduce those expenses. So at Naranja, it was identified to add additional sport fields. That's where we could place BMX, skate park, additional walking paths, adding pickleball courts to the community center, as well as Naranja Park. So that's how the concept plans came about.
And did the public have an opportunity to comment on those plans?
Several times, Mr. Mayor. Yes, they did.
And the items that are listed in the staff report for this agenda item, these priorities, is there anything on this list that is not a part of that concept plan?
I need to take this off. It's difficult. So to answer your question, no. Everything that's included in the priority list is included in the master plan.
The Parks and Recreation Advisory Board, what was their recommendation in regards to the capital investments for Naranja Park?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board voted unanimously to approve the master plan document as presented.
Thank you. Councilmember Solomon?
Christy, during this planning process, was the community input that at least 50% of the funds have to be spent on a Naranja town site? Where did that come from?
Councilmember Solomon, how things were funded were not included in the master plan. There was a variation of how things could be, but in terms of how they were prioritized to that question, that was not included in the master plan.
Okay. Next question is actually the process for this Parks and Rec study that we're saying everybody reviewed and approved and recommended is very interesting. Initially, we started out with a statistically valid survey. And right in the consultant's own words, it said, only scientific and defensible method to understand the community needs was that this statistically valid survey along demographics, a lot of variables, and surveys were sent out to specific households to make it statistically valid. 375 of those came back. So they said there was a 95% level of confidence. That's where the statistically valid survey ended. We've discussed for years, should we have a basketball court? Should we have a skating court? Should we have a splash pad? Should we have more swimming lanes? Time and time again, we struggled with this as far as the needs versus the available funds. It was concluded only a statistically valid survey. I heard those words so many times in the last year and a half that I can't even count them. The statistically valid survey did not design that master plan that we have. Not at all. What happened is after the statistically valid survey, we did an online survey, which was not statistically valid whatsoever. After that online survey, we asked for community input, which once again was not at all statistically valid. The people who wanted a park said, we want a park. We want a playground. We want a bike track. Then a master plan was developed off of all of those three items, and they even did another iteration where they showed the master plan, and the few people who reviewed it got to say, yay or nay, we like it or we don't like it. So let's first be clear that those master plans have no relationship whatsoever to the statistically valid survey. The minute we introduced those other elements, it removed all aspects and legitimacy to the statistically valid survey. And it's totally biased. In addition, some of the items we listed, we have 32 items that the public said they wanted, the community said they wanted. One of our priorities was number 28 out of 32. Another was 25 out of 32. Then we got better, 17 and 15 out of 32. If we look at the original statistically valid survey, we're ignoring most of the top items requested by the community. So make no mistake about this. Yes, it's wonderful to have all these recreational facilities. Naranja Park is great. I use the dog park facility. I see how crowded and how utilized it is. There's no doubt about that. That's not what the conversation is about. There's no doubt about bonding. 3 years ago, I argued and argued and argued for bonding for the community center and golf course, yet the majority of the council insisted on a pay-as-you-go and cost us millions of dollars. And now they finally realize bonding is the way to go. Maybe it comes with some experience. I don't know. But I'm glad to see it. So I don't believe we're on the right track whatsoever, particularly making this an emergency. Yes, I know rates may go up. They're not going to double or triple in the next 30 days, which is the worst case scenario, we're saying, if it's not an emergency. But I think this whole bond was not done in the proper procedure. And it's basically, once again, I think, why did we spend money on a statistically valid survey if we're just going to ignore it? Which is what we're doing right now. So those are my comments.
Any additional discussion? Councilmember Nicholson?
Hey, Christy. Did we do a statistically valid survey before we spent $20 million to buy the golf course?
Councilmember Nicholson, the answer is no.
Thank you.
Councilmember Solomon?
Is any member of this council, was any member of this current council a member of council that made that decision?
Councilmember Solomon, no.
And how much time, I guess there's no point getting to the fact of timelines.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Mr. Mayor, may I suggest that possibly we take a vote on the issuance of the bond first, and then if that is successful, then take a vote on the issue of the emergency?
Yes, all you would need to do is make a substitute motion, which would essentially just delete the emergency clause, take that vote. That can pass by a 4-3 vote, and then you could take the emergency. Then you could take a separate vote on whether it ought to be included in an emergency clause. That would require a 6-1 vote. To amend the current motion.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, I move to amend the current motion, removing the phrase "and declaring an emergency."
Second. Okay, so seconded by Mayor Winfield. Any discussion? Mr. Standish, roll call vote, please.
Can I get clarification on the vote that this is specifically?
So this vote is a vote on the motion that you had before, deleting the words "and declaring an emergency."
Thank you.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowen?
Yes.
Councilmember Green?
No.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon?
No.
And Mayor Winfield?
Yes. The motion passes 5-2. Vice Mayor Barrett?
Mr. Mayor, I move to now vote that we declare these bonds an emergency in order to take advantage of current interest rates.
Second. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon?
Can we have a little more clarification on what the results of this will be?
Certainly, Councilmember Solomon, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I'm actually going to phone a friend for us. Tim Stratton, our bond legal counsel, is on the line on Zoom. And so, Tim, if you can address that question from Councilmember Solomon.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Gephardt. Mr. Mayor, members of council, the effect of the emergency clause is to, if the emergency clause is approved, would allow the town to move forward with the sale and closing of the bonds immediately, taking advantage of the favorable interest rate environment. If, however, the emergency clause is not approved, then per state statute, as I'm sure the town attorney can remind you, the town would need to wait 30 days before the legislative action could be acted upon and bonds sold. Thank you.
Councilmember Solomon.
Well, it's obvious that the bond has been approved, so there'd be no reason to want to delay the actual issuance and take a chance on what the interest rates are going to do. That would be my interpretation.
Any other discussion? Councilmember Nicholson.
I agree with Steve, and thank you for making that comment. I appreciate it.
Any other discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. Ayes have it, 7-0. Thank you, Mr. Gephardt.
Thank you.
Future agenda items? Future agenda items? Councilmember Bowen?
Yes. I, too, was at the conference for Arizona Cities and Towns a couple of weeks back. I was probably at different presentations than my other council members, but I do recall one presentation that had a great impact upon me, and this presentation was on infrastructure, IT infrastructure for cities and towns, and the presenters made a very compelling case to we council people of the great dangers that are out there. They maintained that our IT infrastructure is being probed on the average of once every 20 or 30 seconds for weaknesses. You know, fortunately, we probably don't have very many weaknesses because we're not reporting any difficulties. But I went and asked them after the presentation, you know, what would you recommend to we council members to do? And they said, why don't you consider, you know, getting a report at one of your council meetings and asking your IT department, when's the last time you did a gap analysis to determine, first off, what do you think the likelihood of an IT security breach would be? And more importantly, how would you recover from it? Because the point that was made to us was the feelings of these experts was these types of breaches are just almost inevitable. You know, if you haven't been breached, it's probably because you're not high enough profile target for hackers. So I would like to recommend as an agenda
item. Your mic went off.
Sorry, my finger slipped. I'd like to recommend as an agenda item from an upcoming meeting that we get a report from IT. You know, when's the last time we did a gap analysis? And more importantly, if we were to have a serious IT breach or a hack, what would our recovery plan be? Of course, no sort of proprietary or secret information could be revealed, but in general, what would we do and what could we expect? I think that people need to know what we might expect if we were hacked. So I was hoping there might be a second for that. And it's not an immediate, but I think it's an important thing for us to talk about.
Second. Any other agenda items? Seeing none, I move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Good night, everyone.